How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details. How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the show where myself, my name is Dan Selke, I work at winterscoming.net, talk with Daniel Roman, who also works at winterscoming.net.
Hello.
But all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, dragons, horses, swords, robots, aliens, such things as this. Daniel, how are you doing today? And don't lie, or I'll know.
Okay, I won't lie. I am harried. I am stressed out. No, not really. I'm excited to talk dragons and mutants and other such things. My dog's romping around. It's a good day. How are you, Dan? And how are all of you in the chat? Great to see you.
Not bad at all. I'm trying a dark look, where it's just my ring light and the darkness in me, and seeing if that produces some kind of pleasant effect. If it does, let me know. If it doesn't, let me know that too. And let's get into it.
I think it looks nice.
Hey, Julie. Good to see you. All right, Daniel, I thought we'd start this show off. We have some good things to talk about. Obviously, we're talking about House of the Dragon every Sunday night after it airs. Newest episode. I can't believe there are only two episodes left. Looking forward to
Crazy.
A spirited post-mortem after the whole thing is over. But there are other things going on in the world of entertainment, books, movies, TV, all that other stuff I mentioned. And we will get to some of it. But first, we got to have our Westeros corner. We have to dive deep
yes.
into the miasma that is the House of the Dragon, Night of Seven Kingdoms, Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire, space, and bring you the details that no one else in the lamestream media would dare to. For example, Daniel, House of the Dragon season 2 is almost
yes.
over, but I'm happy to say that they are laying some seeds, some dragon seeds, if you will.
Nice.
What's going to come later?
Yes.
This most recent episode, which has had a decent amount of controversy around it, by the way. We can talk about that a little bit too.
I hate it.
I love it. Had a couple things in it that I think were worth mentioning because they show that the show is trying to plan for the long game in a way that looks more successful than when season 1 did it. Remember when season 1
yes.
had a character named Harold Westerling who just kind of wandered off the screen and never came back? Remember when season 1 had a character
yes.
named Laenor Velaryon who didn't die the way he was supposed to, and then they had to kind of retroactively like retrofit that later? That was the bad kind
yes.
of long-term planning. But this is the good kind of long-term planning. Daniel, why don't you tell us about it after I answer the question from Noah Lelina. Oh, no. Yeah, has asked if we've seen episode 7. And I'll just say right now, no, we haven't. They're actually holding back the screeners a bit. We're going to get them, but too late to talk about it on this show, unfortunately. But we'll talk all about it on Sunday.
Yes.
Now, I have the question. Daniel,
yes.
how is House of the Dragon setting up what's to come in future seasons?
Well, by, as you said, planting seeds, talking about characters, maybe giving us a few teases that could pan out to be characters we expect are coming from the book, but aren't totally sure. I do think it's interesting that you said that this season is doing it more successfully than season 1, which I agree with. And I feel like a big part of the difference between what we're going to talk about in this show, which is some of the foreshadowing and things like that that they've been putting in, and what they did with the first season, is that those two examples you use, so like Harold Westerling and Laenor Velaryon, both of those are characters who die in the book, who we fully expect to probably never see again in House of the Dragon. So that was like setting it up by being like, yes, we're going to set something up now that will resolve off screen and we probably won't even mention, which is very different than this season where they're mentioning a bunch of things and teasing things that we very much expect to see play out in future seasons. Perhaps nowhere is that clearer than with Daeron Targaryen, the missing fourth child of Alicent Hightower. And I'm so curious to get your thoughts on this, Dan. So Daeron, he's been alive for a while, but he wasn't mentioned a single time in House of the Dragon season one, to the point where we were all wondering if he was even going to be in the show or if he was being cut out, similar to the way Aegon II's youngest son with Helaena, Maelor, was cut out of the show. But Daeron is going to be in House of the Dragon. It's been all but confirmed. I mean, it has been confirmed at this point.
Yeah.
And yeah, this latest episode featured a wonderful scene that this image on the screen is from, of Alicent Hightower talking to her brother Gwaine and basically just asking what Daeron's like, because Daeron went to ward in Old Town with the Hightowers when he was a kid, which I like world building wise that they mentioned that, just because it hasn't been talked about a lot, but this is a very, it was a thing that happened in medieval times in Europe, and it's a huge part of George R. R. Martin's Westeros continent in his world, that children from some of these noble houses go sometimes to live with other noble houses to strengthen alliances and all that sort of stuff. So I thought that this scene with Alicent actually made the fact that they didn't mention Daeron in season one work better. I won't say it totally fixed it, but I do think it made it more a more compelling plot point, because it leaned into the idea that Alicent is basically an absentee mother. What are your thoughts on Daeron Targaryen, Dan? Do you think they're setting this up well? Do you want to talk a little bit about who he is? Where yeah. You at?
I mean, I think, okay, first question. Is it pronounced Daeron? Is that how you say it?
That's how Alicent said it, I think.
Okay.
So Daeron, I'm trying to say it like, I'm saying it like Alicent said it, but I always said Daeron.
Daeron Targaryen. Okay.
Daeron Targaryen.
I think he's great. I think he's the most compelling off-screen character the show has. My theory is that in the first season, they didn't know if they were going to have him at all. That's why they didn't mention him. They weren't sure if they were going to be able to fit him in. And then when they broke season two, they were like, you know what? We're going to, well, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's have him. So now they're setting him up. I think set him up very nicely. I like, it kind of creates a third man Orson Welles-esque like anticipation. So when he does show up, we'll be like, that's him. And when we'll be even more surprised when he's the son of Kristen Cole and has dark hair, which is the rumor.
All.
And I'm going to believe the rumor, I think, until I'm proven otherwise. It sounds like something the show would do.
God, I will be really disappointed if the show does that. I could see how they would make it work, but like the impression I feel like they gave, and the actors have talked about this, Olivia Cooke and Fabian Frankel, that Alicent and Kristen's relationship really started after King Viserys died. Mm. So it would be some retconning to be like Daeron is Kristen's bastard. I don't think we need that. I feel like it would kind of undermine the idea that the same kid who was born with these same parents turned out so differently than his brothers, to be like, well, he had a different dad, so his temperament's different. I think that the show would, something would be lost there personally. I don't think that makes any sense. I don't buy it. I'm not about it.
I'm completely with you. It makes no sense. The show would lose something. It will happen, though. That's kind of where I am. We'll see though.
Yeah,
they are setting up something.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning, Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
And I do think it's interesting, too, that so in Fire and Blood, this is a lot of things are talked about, like, and then there was Daeron Targaryen, and this was his dragon, and they started riding in X year. I like that the show is almost building a storyline for Daeron while he's off screen, because we found out a little about his character in this episode. The preview for episode 7 has an important line, I think, that says his dragon, Tessarion, has taken wing, essentially meaning that Tessarion is now big enough and flying so he could probably be mounted by Daeron in the relative near future, which is the book is kind of just presents it as by the time the war started, Daeron and his dragon were just old enough to be flying around. Tessarion is basically the youngest dragon, I think, that is able to take part in the war, aside from maybe Moondancer, actually. Even though the show seems to be making Tessarion younger than Moondancer, but that's not really that important. So I almost wonder if they're setting this up so that, like, there's a battle that happens early for Daeron that I'm expecting to see very early in season 3, where he earns the nickname Daeron the Daring. And I almost wonder if they're going to make that, like, the first time he really flies to Tessarion, they're going to make, like, a moment out of it. But I think either way, they're definitely doing some really good setup with him, and none of that's going to pan out this season. So, yay, House of the Dragon, for having the long game.
Completely. But we'll see.
Oof.
Daniel, I liked this bit, that you caught this, and I did not catch this, which yes. I liked. During that riot scene, which I thought was really, really fun, I really enjoyed all the terror and the violence and the solidarity among the hungry poor to destroy their wicked masters. There's the bit where Allison and Helena are rushing out of the Great Sept, and some rando tries to, I don't know, I guess go up to them for whatever reason, and the one Kingsguard lobs his arm off. Which was just a fun moment. Like, it was fun to see, like, a bloody arm on the ground. And B, I did not think this, but you did, because you're very, very smart. How does that set up something to come in this story?
Yeah, so this is not confirmed. This is fully tinfoil hat theoryville, but I do think it could make a lot of sense. So there is a character in Fire and Blood in the Dance of the Dragons called the Shepherd, who is essentially this story's version of the High Sparrow. He is a beggar who is, you know, sources conflict about his origins. Some people think he was a thief because he's missing his right hand. And that is the punishment for thieving in Westeros. You get your right hand cut off. Others say he was a member of the Poor Fellows, which I believe is part of an offshoot of the Faith Militant, which was outlawed before the time of King Viserys. So this character basically comes in late in the dance, and he starts preaching against the Targaryens to the small folk. And he assembles a very fervent following that basically leads into, like, one of the single most tragic events of the entire war, and fully upends the balance of power in some pretty insane, horrible, terrifying ways. So the Shepherd, I don't think there's any question that we're going to see the Shepherd in House of the Dragon. And I think we may have gotten our hint here because this guy, so the actor who played him who played this character who got their arm cut off in the show, he's a stunt performer because they had to do a bunch of different takes. You can see about it on the House the Dragons Built, which is the behind the scenes documentary for this episode on Max. But the look of this dude, he looks very similar to some of the drawings of the Shepherd. We've got another one that I believe is a piece of fan art, which it lives on a lot of the wikis for this character. There's also this guy,
oh,
which
good,
is the one drawing of him. Yes, from Fire and Blood. It might be a little hard to see, but he's got a bunch of flies buzzing around him. He's got no shoes. He's got no hands. It would make sense, I think, to do an origin story for this character in this way, where we see how he gets maimed, and then he comes back and just absolutely ruins everyone's day. Because that makes him hate the Targaryens. What do you think, Dan? Is this all too out there? Do you think they were setting this up here?
No, I think it's neat, petite, and ready to eat. I think it's really, really neat and tidy. Just, sure, lob a guy's arm off and then bring him back later. And then you can point back and say, like, ooh, we saw that guy. I think that's a neat little bit of storytelling that I am now convinced is going to happen. Even if it's a different actor. Yeah. I think the response is going to happen. It's really easy to slide in there. Some good comments around here. Hey, Robert, better late than never. Chris asked, do we think Aemon and Helaen will have a child, a.k.a. Maelor? I'm thinking no. I think Maelor is cut completely.
No.
Noah with a really good question. Where is the season sending off on? We're barely into the biggest events of the dance, and this show is apparently going to be 4 seasons long. They better not skip big stuff. I've been thinking about that more and more lately. It is looking more and more like season is not going to end on a big honking high note. I keep thinking about what the producer said about like a major battle being moved into season 3 for whatever reason. I don't know. Budget, time, trying to stretch it out. They might live to regret that because I feel like after a season's been a little bit heavy on setup, and we'll say deliberately paced, which is a fun euphemism for slow at times, we could use a big adrenaline shot, and the choice to remove it is, I don't know, maybe not the good one. I don't really see them getting to like a giant thing by the end of episode 8. I am looking forward to the dragon seed stuff. That looks good. I'll save some of my bigger comments for our post-mortem. How loud am I on this podcast that's dedicated to pop culture, all things pop culture, sci-fi, fantasy books, and so forth? But Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon to start, to say that I've had some big problems with this season.
I mean, I think that's fair. I think you're not alone in that. A lot of people have, I think. I have not really. I've just been really enjoying it. They are making some changes, but I don't know, Dan. You can speak your truth. This is a safe space.
Oh, I will say that I really love this last one. And let's address that briefly, because this last episode actually got fairly blasted online, or at least kind of review bombed is the words that the aging children say, where it was kind of downvoted on places like IMDb or IMDb for the lowest rating of any episode of the show yet, which surprised me at first because I really liked it. I thought it was one of the better ones they've had this season. I loved the riot.
Yes,
I loved a lot of the conversations. Like you said, I loved the Allison Gawain conversation. I loved the Laris Aegon connection. I liked the Rhaenyra Massari connection. What else did I like? Oh, I love Sir Stefan Darkling getting torched alive by a dragon after he tried so hard to mount one. I thought it was a lot of good stuff. So I was surprised, and I had two explanations for it. One is that I wonder if this, and this is the more minor explanation, by the way, is that it's a slow pace of the season is catching up to it a little bit, because I wonder if you couldn't have mashed the last 2 episodes into one, or at least 1.5. Mainly, I think it's probably because Maseri and Rhaenyra kissed at the end, and a lot of folk did not like that. Get your gay out of my dragon show. I feel like people are willing to watch a queer character if they're kind of on the side, but making like the main popular one kiss a girl, not unlike Katy Perry, I think may have hit some folks the wrong way and they dogpiled on it, because there really isn't any reason to downvote this one in particular, which was pretty solid all around.
I agree with pretty much everything you just said. I think maybe there's a little bit of that things catching up to it, because I did see some people online complaining this one was slow too, and like there's no world where this one is slow compared to some of the other episodes this season, so that does feel a little bit like the it was a good one. So that feels a little like the mental narrative, kind of similar to The Witcher season 3, where people came out of the gate saying this is so awful, and in reality it was better than, like, much better, indisputably better than the previous season. Like, if you watch them side by side, you can't even compare them. And I do feel like there's a little bit of that with the show is so slow, when people are saying that at this point with this episode. But I think you're probably right about the Mysaria and Rhaenyra being the main cause of the review bombing. So when we say review bombing, that's different than just like people are unhappy with it. That is a lot of people like one starring it disproportionately. So like this episode is now like the fifth lowest, I think, rated on IMDb out of the entire Game of Thrones franchise. And I think no matter how you slice it, it's pretty obvious it doesn't deserve that. And I have seen, I don't know how true this is, but that there are some countries like Saudi Arabia where it is being disproportionately review bombed. I don't know if that's true. I haven't actually dug into it. But I find this so frustrating, to be honest, because it's similar to like Ellie with The Last of Us, where people had problems with like the Ellie romance episode. And it's like Ellie is a canonically gay character in this story. Like that is it's just who she is. Like full stop. They're not changing anything. This isn't agendas at work. That's the character in the story. And like it is similar with Rhaenyra being bisexual. Like it's strongly hinted in the book that she has at least one romance with another woman, and that she's okay with unusual partnering situations, as we see with Mysaria and another character later that Rhaenyra gives her blessing to. So this felt like a supernatural way to bring that part of her character in. I could rant at length about this, why I think it makes me so angry that this episode has been review bombed. But yeah, so it's interesting times for House of the Dragon, I think.
Yeah. I don't want to discount folk who, like, say, Julie, like, if people are frustrated over Daemon, the storyline is boring and going on for too long. I don't want to discount there are issues. But yeah, I think a lot of this one, for this particular one. I think the next one will be a bit of a proving ground. And yeah, I agree. People are upset by the lack of action. I'm upset by the lack of action, frankly. And by the way, when I say action, I don't mean fighting. I mean kind of like forward momentum. But we'll see what next week brings. House of the Dragon. Sorry, go on. You would have.
I was just going to say, I do think it is interesting hearing, you know, just talk about how we're a little unsure how it's going to end. Stuff like that. Will it actually end on a high note? Because the sowing of the seeds is the one thing we know is coming. After that, the big question is, do they do the gullet? Do they have time for the gullet this season? No, and it seems like the answer is no. I don't know how, if they do King's Landing, the fall of King's Landing before the gullet no longer makes sense. So I don't know how they're going to make all that. It's a huge question what they're going to do with the finale for everyone, I think, at this point.
I know what they're going to do. But they're going to do the Battle of the Red Fork. They'll make a big deal out of it. And the big things will be conversations between Rhaenyra and Daemon, and then Rhaenyra and a mystery character who I don't want to reveal. But that's what the season finale would be. It's not going to have a big, like, that kind of big thing, which is kind of too bad.
Yeah, I mean, making the Red Fork, I mean, I guess they save dragon budget, because unless they put Caraxes there, there isn't, I don't think, even a dragon at the Red Fork battle. So I'm sure they'll change that so that there is one, because otherwise there's not going to be any dragons, really. Man, that's a choice. I don't know how I feel about that choice. That's interesting to me, to center probably the least important battle in the whole Dance of the Dragons as the finale of season 2. But we'll see what happens.
We'll see what
happens. But I was going to say, I did crunch some numbers today, because you had an interesting article about the runtimes and everything, how we now know the runtimes for every episode of season 2. The finale is the longest show episode in the show's history. I crunched some numbers because I was curious. So even though this this season has longer episodes. It's 8 episodes instead of 10. They're on average a little longer. We're still about 77 minutes shorter for season 2 than season 1. So that's a pretty, it's basically like almost an episode and a half of difference. Once you like compare all of the run times and add and subtract and whatever. I really hate this. I think if we're really seeing that this is a show that needs the 10 episodes, because if 2 more episodes would have gotten them to the gullet, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, oof, no doubt that would have been a better ending. King's Landing. But
yeah.
The gullet, yeah. It's
an interesting, maybe would have been watching it later. But yeah, it's curious. Maybe we'll find out some way. I mean, honestly, I wonder if I'm kind of afraid that it'll be such a bit of a deflation that it'll hurt the show's chances to kind of go the whole way, but that it won't be able to finish its whole run. Like season 3 is coming, but I don't know about season 4 after this, which would probably end it.
My hope is that it is a little bit of a deflation, and that gives HBO the kick in the pants to actually give it 10 episodes next season. I'm going to be a delusional optimist. That is what I hope. I hope season 3 gets, like Noah said, 9 or 10 episodes, because we're already renewed for season 3. Season 3 is probably going to have the God's eye, so it's hard for me to imagine it really losing momentum and HBO being like, guess that Game of Thrones thing didn't work out. I can't imagine them pulling the plug on this show. So,
you have so
Bushmaster.
Much faith in big corporations. I'm shocked. Of course they would pull if it wasn't doing huge numbers.
Yeah, but it is. But no matter how you slice it, so far season 2 has been like extremely successful for HBO. They're clearly putting a ton of money into promo for it. So I don't know what would even constitute a bomb at this point. You know, like we got episode 4 and that went over well enough, I think, for HBO that I can't imagine it. I don't know that there's any damage the end of the season could do, even if the finale is a total flop, that would really impact the show's run.
Oh,
that
I don't know.
It might impact audience excitement.
About people won't return for season 3 after being a little underwhelmed by this one. That's fair. That's what I can see happening. Like,
when they start season 3 with the gullet, they'll reel us back in with an immediate dragon fight.
The problem is then people aren't watching anymore.
We shall see.
Are you going to watch Deadpool and Wolverine, the new Marvel film coming out tomorrow in theaters?
Yes, I am going to go see it tomorrow in theaters, right in the middle of the end of the afternoon, because, yeah, I am stoked for this. It's the most excited that I've been for a Marvel movie in ages. How about you, Dan? Are you going to see this one?
I have a busy weekend. I don't know if we're going to be able to do it this time. I am interested, full disclosure, I don't know when I'm going to find time to do it. And I'm curious about the impressions, because they've been solid, but there's been some like good, whenever people give their impressions, like they're kind of on Twitter impressions of a big new movie, usually they put the kid gloves on, but there's been some highs and lows of this one, with folks saying, for example, Wong updates, calling the movie No Way Home on steroids, takes elements from Boss Baby and Come and See to create a beautiful love letter to cinema. Sean Levy, director, is a true auteur, putting him back in the ranks of Zack Snyder and Wes Anderson. Cinema is back, baby, which is a positive.
What weird.
I was going to say that's positive. Now
the
that
Boss
I read
Baby
it, word for word, it might have been like an underhanded one. But then there were a lot more rough ones, like Jordan Hoffman saying, I just saw the most irritating movie of all time. Hugh Jackman, get it together, man. The reviews are good. It's like 80% last I checked, pretty solid. We are hearing, and neither of us have seen it, Disney wouldn't give us a screener. And by the way, Disney, if you do let me go to your movies in the future, I don't have dignity. I'll say everything you want me to say about them. I'll say great things across the board. That it's very heavy on the metatextual stuff. It's very, very in-jokey. It's, you know, the kind of thing you expect from a Deadpool movie. Very wink, wink, lots of rapid fire, throw everything against the wall kind of jokes, see what sticks. I wonder if that is the kind of thing that they can build into a wider Marvel Cinematic Universe. Because if you ask me, they should just embrace making movies like this discrete events and not try, at least for a while, to build out a big universe until people have kind of calmed down and are ready for that kind of thing again. Because this does feel like an event. They've really used the star power of Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds really well in all the marketing. They've been out in front in a big way. People are going to be very, very curious. I'm sure it'll make a ton of money. My prediction is that it'll be a big hit, and then it will kind of diminish in our minds fairly quickly, because it'll be a little watch it, have fun, and not think about it again, disposable. But I am glad it's going to make money for Disney.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the trend of the recent Marvel movies would say that that is probably going to be the case, because I think that has been the case much more than it hasn't, because they've just been putting so much out that a lot of it has gone the way of, we watched this, it was a thing, and now we can forget about it. This does feel like more of an event to me, because obviously, yes, like, you know, there were 13 X-Men movies that Fox made. Like, Hugh Jackman wasn't in all of them, but he was in most of them, more than anyone else in that entire franchise. So it does feel like a huge deal that they got him back to do this. And I didn't realize until I rewatched the first two Deadpool movies this week that, like, Ryan Reynolds had the gag of, like, picking on Wolverine and Hugh Jackman, like, in both of those movies already. They both start with a Hugh Jackman gag. The first one ends with a Hugh Jackman gag where he takes off his mask and he has a paper mask of Hugh Jackman's face taped to his own face. So, like, I feel like this could be so much fun.
It could be.
Reviews that we're seeing, it almost makes me feel like, I wonder if, like, it almost screams like, were you the right audience for the movie, to me, some of these reviews. Right. Like, there's one that said, this is Jordan Hoffman, "I just saw the most irritating movie of all time. Hugh Jackman, get it together, man." There's another one from William Bibiani that says, "Fun, exhausting, empty calorie, bloodletting mix with a muddled story about giving heroes an ending yet desecrates Logan, the 2017 movie that was supposed to be a send-off for Hugh Jackman." That's a sidebar. They said, "The most annoying guys you know will love it. The least fun people you know will hate it. You already know how you feel about it." And if we're leaving out the most annoying guys and the least fun people, that sounds like, you know, the Venn diagrams is a perfect circle to me. But I've seen a few people say, like, the humor was grating and, like, toilet humor and stuff like that. And it's like, that's kind of Deadpool's thing. So, like, did you like the first two Deadpool movies? Like, it's hard for me to know from those sorts of critiques. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, no one can know until you see it yourself. I mean, the place of the critic has been, you know, greatly diminished in the past couple of decades. I mean, happily, like, we don't matter to, like, influence people. It's people's perceptions. Like, because nowadays they can go right to the source. They can just get what their friends and the other users say. I don't know how I feel about it, frankly. I'm intrigued.
Okay.
I bet it'll be fun. It does seem to come from, like, a place of just really wanting to please the audience, to give you what you want. Is that high art? I don't know. Is that cinema? Questionable, but is it entertaining? Probably.
Yeah, I think it'll be an interesting question of how much the movie feels like that versus how much it feels like a thing they really, like, Ryan Reynolds really wanted to do, because it really does come across in the older Deadpool movies like he would have loved the team up, because he's just cracking jokes about Wolverine all the time. His first actual appearance as Deadpool was in X-Men Origins Wolverine, and they messed up Deadpool so bad that he, in Deadpool 2, in the post-credits, he goes back and assassinates that version of Deadpool through timey-wimey shenanigans. So it does feel like there's an element of, like, are they giving the audience what they want? Maybe, but it almost feels more like they're giving themselves what they really want, because they've wanted to do this really outrageous passion project for so long. So I'm optimistic, but, you know, I think we've been hurt by Marvel before.
I think it'll be fun. I mean, at that level, especially with Disney, Marvel, with this kind of money, like $200 million involved, unless your passion is making the most money possible, there really isn't like a passion project. Like, I'm not sure if it can be. It's so melded, like, kind of corporate interests and the artistic side of the business are, Disney's so good at making them one that it's kind of hard to separate them for me. But I think it'll be entertaining, and I think it'll be a hit, which is one of the things that matters the most. And Julie, did you say you were going to see it on Saturday, but you couldn't? Was it out last Saturday in Australia? That'd be cool. It's coming out tomorrow here stateside.
I don't know if you've seen, but Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds just today did a gag video about why they're not going to Australia on the press tour. So that's out there for anyone who's curious. Because Hugh Jackman is Australian, so they got some good jokes in there about he wanted to go to his home country, and Ryan Reynolds is like, but there's not a lot of people there, so we couldn't justify the plane tickets. Julie says it came out last Thursday. Hugh Jackman, man, pulling the Australian strings to get it out there early.
Australian,
right? Cool. I think you're what you said about, can Disney even really do passion projects, is super interesting. And I think this will be probably the movie that answers that to a degree, because I think the first Deadpool undeniably was one, and that was a Fox movie. Ryan Reynolds had been trying to get it made for years, and when he finally got it made, this came out recently, he actually gave up his salary to pay to have his writers on set with him, because Fox didn't want to pay for them. How many actors would do that? I think it speaks to the passion of
millions
the project.
Of dollars. I'd figure a lot.
I disagree. I think we've seen far more examples of actors who would probably take the money than give up their salary to do a movie to have other people on set with them.
Ryan Reynolds.
It's a testament to how much Ryan Reynolds wanted to get that movie made. And there is a lot of stuff out there about the journey for him in getting Deadpool 1 made. So I don't think there's any question that the first two Deadpools were passion projects. The question is, can that passion survive when it has Disney money and Disney execs behind it?
I don't want to crap on Ryan Reynolds. I think he's very talented. I think he's a little bit kind of like Brandon Sanderson. Where is this going? In that I think he's really talented as a businessman. And again, I don't know him. I think he's a really interesting figure, good actor, all that stuff. Again, he's someone who's perfect for this, because his passion for art and his passion for making a giant hit are so close as to be almost inseparable to me. I think, and you see in the kind of projects he chooses, like, he hasn't gone and done like small, intimate indie dramas or anything with all his success. He's gone Deadpool to Free Guy to other kind of big tent poles. Like, I think he's very smart. I think he's very savvy. But when talking about things like it was passion project, I think it's a passion project with a business plan. I think it's a passion project with a long-term road to extreme profitability. I think that's why he's such a success, because he doesn't just do things because he thinks they're going to be artistically clean. He does things because he thinks they're going to be hits. And nothing wrong with that, but I do think it's a little different than what we usually think of like a passion project. Like, you know, Francis Ford Coppola trying to make Megalopolis with Adam Driver with about his own like crazy wacky ideas about what if he could stop time and I'm going to pop up the Roman Empire. That's a passion project. Deadpool. Okay. Making a movie about an incredibly popular superhero that he knows he knew he could make popular. He knew people would fall in love with him if only they gave him a chance to see him. I think it's passion mixed with savvy. So I think it's a little different, but I think it's really interesting.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, you know, there's no denying the savvy is there. So like, can it only be a passion project if it looks like it's probably gonna tank or be super weird? Cause like Deadpool as a comic character was, he was really niche Deadpool before the movies. Like it was mostly like hardcore comic nerds who even knew who he was. So I think you're right that he probably knew it could do well, but it was still a, you know, only because these are the times we live in. Deadpool 1 was had a budget of $58 million. And he had to fought for years to get it made. Ever, you know, his debut as Deadpool was like 7 or 8 years earlier than that in Origins Wolverine. And they tried to basically have him for a movie and kill him off. And he pushed hard enough to get Deadpool 1 made. So yeah, all of that is fair. I think the passion for the thing speaks for itself when you watch it personally, but I do respect what you're saying about this. And I think it is fair when business and passion linger in such a way. Where do we like even draw the lines?
Like Francis Ford Coppola make it Megalopolis. No one's going to watch that. Like there's something to be said for kind of merging your artistic pursuits with your business savvy. And I do think that's
sure.
I think Ryan Reynolds is a visionary. I think he's very, very smart. At the same time, it is you wonder, like, I don't know, should the person who's crazy successful like this use his platform to push more challenging kind of things that are off the beaten path, or should they use it to redouble the success they've already had by making things they know will go down over easy with a lot of people? That's a more philosophical question we can get into another time. But that's kind of the thing I think about when I see folk like Ryan Reynolds, like The Rock. Like, what is the nature of celebrity? What is the responsibility of celebrity versus other folk who, like a Chris Hemsworth, is a more of like an old-timey movie star where he does Thor and does Marvel, and then he goes off and makes like these smaller projects elsewhere, which hasn't really worked for him. So in today's day, I think it's smarter to be the businessman hyphenate artist, but businessman first.
I feel like, and I know we have to move on to Lord of the Rings, but I feel like Ryan Reynolds deserves a little more credit because he basically did exactly what you're saying. Like, granted, it's still superhero movies, but when the first Deadpool came out, it was an R-rated superhero movie that broke the fourth wall and that we had never really seen that before. So he was pushing the boundaries to do something different in a well-trod genre. This movie, he got Hugh Jackman back, and Hugh Jackman basically came back to do the movie with him. So it's not, Hugh Jackman wouldn't have signed on for this movie if it was just another Marvel movie. He signed on because he wanted to do the movie with Ryan Reynolds. I think there is something to be said for that in terms of pushing things in a more daring direction, but like maybe he should be off being an indie darling. That's fair.
No,
I think if we get like 20 Deadpools, I'll agree with that. But I think for Deadpool, for this one, like I still think they're pushing boundaries in some interesting ways. Granted, I haven't seen the movie yet. That may be totally wrong, but we'll
see. I do agree with you. I want to make it clear that I think Ryan Reynolds is very smart, very savvy, very good, and really knows how to use celebrity. Like very few people do nowadays, and knows the value of taking risks in that framework. I just think that there is a difference between that and kind of the artist who strives for something, I don't know, that folk don't know that they want yet. I think he's great, though.
Sure.
And I'm intrigued.
Let's call it the Adam Driver.
Let's do it. I mean, really quickly, we have some other topics to get to. We got on a lovely, yes. I've enjoyed this tangent. Woo. I like getting deep into stuff. Yeah. Really, really fast. The Rings of Power is coming out next month, August 29th. They're ramping up for it. I'm just going to go through this really quickly. Kieran Hines from Game of Thrones is going to play a wizard. Who the hell knows what kind? This is a big question mark for me. This show, whether it's going to be entertaining on its own merits, whether it's going to be entertaining as an adaptation of Lord of the Rings. I don't know. They were also sharing that the first scene will feature Adar, the dark elf, crowning Sauron, but then taking the crown and stabbing him in the back, which is definitely not something that happened in The Lord of the Rings, The Silmarillion. But they're very off the beaten path, and that could be a lot of fun, or it could be a $500 million pay-on to hubris. And I'm looking forward to seeing which it is.
Yeah, aren't we all? Rings of Power has been announcing a few new cast members in the recent weeks, a lot of smaller parts. But obviously Kieran Hines, Mance Rayder, it'll be cool to see him with a big goofy beard playing a wizard. He's always excellent, so you know he's going to be good, but will Rings of Power be good?
I have no idea whatsoever.
Same. And I felt this way before season one. Like, if I remember right, my first impression review for the first episodes of Rings of Power were like, thank Eru, it's not horrible. And I think that attitude of like, is this going to be a total train wreck or will it be really beautiful and majestic and cool? It's kind of interesting to come into the second season and feel like the exact same way, except more nervous because we've seen some of the issues that season one had. I hope it's decent. Like I'm hopeful that it gets a better second season than its first. It finds its footing a little more, you know, a lot of Rings of Power's issues to me were small issues that added up to be large issues. Like, small plot beats that didn't make sense or didn't tie things together well, like, you know, the TV show writing of it wasn't great in terms of just getting from point A to point B in interesting ways instead of a straight line. So it's like it's stuff like that that I feel like they could improve on, which is better than just like the show is a total mess. And yeah, I just don't know. Are you excited for this? Like, where's your hype level at from 1 to 10 for Rings of Power season 2?
My hype level is at a Q. I really am not sure what exactly I'm going to see, what I'm expecting, what I'm not. I'm keeping an open mind. And I'll be there. And I would love to watch those screeners. Amazon, Jeff Bezos, I love you. I'm a Prime member. You have to give me the screeners.
I'm a Prime member. Come on.
Yeah,
that's a reasonable argument. Yeah, it is only fair.
Are you watching or reading anything, Dan, at the moment you want to talk about? And anybody out there, of course, are you watching or reading anything that's on your mind to like to share?
Yeah, I have been. So I've still been reading The Mercy of Gods, the new James S.A. Corey. It remains great. I'll probably finish it this weekend. Beyond that, obviously, watching House of the Dragon on repeat. Sure. I dipped back into Thrones a little bit yesterday, revisiting some bits of Fire and Blood. The only unusual thing I've been doing in recent weeks, and by recent weeks, I mean the past week, is I've been on an X-Men binge to get ready for Deadpool and Wolverine. So I've watched Wolverine Origins, The Wolverine, Deadpool 1 and 2, and started Days of Future Past last night, which Days of Future Past remains a really excellent movie.
Yeah,
it's one of those movies where I'm like, I can't believe this thing exists.
My favorite is still X2. But it might be like childhood bias.
The best.
I'm not sure.
It's not. X2, I've seen them all fairly recently. X2 still holds up as the best, I think.
All right, cool.
But Days of Future Past is close.
Also, I remember that being very, very good. I will say, I'm watching House of the Dragon, of course. I recently started just because we ran out of things to watch, like, over dinner. So I got a recommendation. You should watch Resident Alien with Alan Tudyk.
Oh, yeah.
as
How are you liking it?
Funny alien who space alien, not Bolivian. The funny alien who must disguise himself as a human to fool people in town. And it's cute. I like it. I'm still trying to piece together whether I really like it or find it prosaic or whether I enjoy it. I like Alan Tudyk. I've loved for years. He's always so good.
And yeah,
he brings a
lot
of physicality to it. I guess I wasn't sure what I was expecting. We're like a few episodes in. I didn't know there was, I thought it'd be more of a straight comedy, but it's kind of like a melodrama too. And it feels a little, I don't want to say CW is shorthand for cheesy. So I won't. It feels a little cheesy at times. Kind of like a standard issue melodrama. But
yes,
I can enjoy those. And I do really like his performance as the alien. I think it's very strong.
Yeah. So I haven't seen too much of that show. Obviously, he's the highlight. He's just such a good actor. It's like he's never going to be bad in whatever he's in. I group this. So I haven't gotten into Resident Alien. And in my mind, I group it. So the one person I know who talks about that show all the time is my mother-in-law, who really likes shows like The Big Bang Theory. So it sits in my head as like that kind of cable show that's like, it's appealing to a broader, maybe slightly older general audience, as opposed to a lot of the, you know, more niche streaming shows we usually talk about on the pod.
Yes, it's definitely a bit that's, more aiming for the masses, which is fine.
Yeah, which is not bad. Totally. It's just the type of show it is, I think.
Like, the jokes are kind of broad, but then there are ones that hit. So yeah, I'm liking it. Also, the other two on Max is a very good cutting show that I'm enjoying quite a bit of. Other folks nice. Here, Julie tried to watch, Those About to Die on Peacock, the Gladiator show with Anthony Hopkins starring as the Emperor. And what? Ewan Rayan, Ramsey Bolton, as somebody. Yeah, I heard press is not been great on that show. Too bad, because it looks like they really went all out to, you know, rent the chariots and whatnot. I haven't watched it. I haven't heard the best of things. And I'm sorry you didn't like it. But maybe they dropped all 10 episodes, though. I remember that, too. So all of them are out right now. So I guess the final word is probably in. Maybe we'll think better of it when Gladiator 2 comes out and we saw how good we used to have it. Daniel, do you want to roll into our final segment of the afternoon, the WIC News lightning round?
We probably should, lest we make everyone late for their 4 o'clock ET engagements they have directly after our show.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay.
Oh, as always,
so
these
Julie
are kind of
like
definitely
it, I'm sorry, but
okay,
but it was so bad in places, maybe up or down kind of thing, maybe to find an audience. I hope it does. I like seeing that kind of ambition rewarded, but yeah, we'll see. All right,
I just Daniel? Think it's so interesting, like, what's the unique angle of that? I don't know anything about that show aside from that it's a gladiator show. I feel like we've had so many of those that you need something to stand out from, like Spartacus and Gladiator and all of these other shows. I just don't know what it is for that one. I'd never heard of it before last week, but that's a whole different podcast.
Well, while we do lightning round, where we kind of give our 20-second opinions on things we don't have time to get to anybody on the show, Julie, what is unique about Those About to Die, in your opinion, in terms of Gladiator shows? I'm curious to know. All right, Daniel, as usual, these aren't in any kind of order, so I'll just go ahead and ask you, and we'll see where we land. Daniel.
Sounds good.
Leslie Headland, the showrunner behind Star Wars The Acolyte, says that they haven't heard anything about a season 2 renewal from Disney.
I think that's not surprising given how divisive it was. You know, a show has to really be doing gangbusters to get an early renewal in today's day and age. As much as I thought The Acolyte was pretty mid, I do hope they get a second season because they left a lot of plot threads hanging. Like, it's obvious they were hoping they might get one. So for that reason, I hope they get one, but no word yet. ooh, but shows that are getting another season that we'll even get to watch in the next few months. The final season of What We Do in the Shadows drops October 21st.
Come on. I really like the show. I always have. This has been a rock solid sitcom. God, just like it's a half hour sitcom about vampires, no laugh track. You got some filmic experimentation going on. Good characters, good dialogue, good jokes. Love the accents. Love just saying that being the characters in day-to-day life. Show's great. I recommend it. I'm glad it's any at the top of its game. Good for Laszlo. Good for the other ones. I'll be watching. And in Halloween time.
Isn't he nominated for an Emmy? Matt Berry. I think so, for last season.
Yeah, it is. Matt Berry is up for Best Actor in Comedy. Good for him. I will ask you this one, because I know you're more tapped into this.
Yes.
Halo, the Paramount Plus adaptation of the popular video games, has been canceled after 2 seasons. Your thoughts?
I think it's a... I'm a little sad because I enjoyed Halo, but I'm not surprised. I'm not a huge fan of the games, so that gave me a much kinder lens to watch it through. I think a lot of the game fans were really alienated by the choices that it made, because Halo forged its own path for better and worse. So I'm not too surprised. They are looking for a new home for season 3, but I really don't know if they're going to find one or not. All right. Speaking of shows, if we run longer than 20 seconds, I won't be mad. Speaking of shows with interesting, weird news that makes me nervous they might end sooner than I expected, The Sandman is apparently filming scenes from the penultimate volume of the comics for its second season. What do we make of this?
Yeah, which suggests they're wrapping the show up early, because there's like a lot of volumes to film before they get to this part. I hope not. I really like the first season. I love the comic book, The Sandman, droopy, sad, eternal man. Maybe it's like a flash forward or some kind of dream. I hope so, because I want the show to go on for a while. I want to see the entire story adapted. And if they do end it early, I'm sure it was because they didn't have enough money. So we'll see what happens there. Hopefully soon. Hey, Daniel, I will ask you this one. Did you know, Daniel, that neither The Boys nor Stranger Things officially will air new seasons in 2025? It's Viva 2026.
Stranger Things won't air in 2025? I thought Netflix Stranger Things
Netflix had a little meeting. Oh, did they say they would air in 2025? This could be a 22nd.
I think Stranger
thing
Things is going to air. Yeah, I think The Boys is definitely not coming back. I think Stranger Things is coming back next year.
Well,
so Stranger Things not this year. Ooh, that was us figuring our stuff out live
round
on air.
I'm sorry about that, everybody.
Was it a waste, or was it the lightning rounds story that was promised? Okay, it was probably a waste. Here's one that may have been a waste for Disney. So according to a Deadline source, the news outlet, Hollywood Trade news outlet, Disney's deal with Doctor Who apparently, quote, hangs in the balance, end quote. What does that mean, Dan?
Team with Doctor Who for this new season with Nkuti Gatwa to kind of give them a lot more money to up their budgets. And the first season did all right. And we're hearing that they might not renew the partnership, which I'm not sure where that would leave Doctor Who. They would probably keep going. It's kept going for the past 60 years. But it would be a bit of a fumble if they made this commitment and then quickly abandoned it. So we'll see where that goes.
Huge fumble on one of the longest running sci-fi properties in the world.
Daniel. Some fun audiobook news. His Dark Materials star Ruth Wilson, who I really like in that show, will record new audiobook versions of Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials books.
Look, I love this. Ruth Wilson was Mrs. Coulter. She was my favorite actor in that show. She's perfect for this. Reminds me of Rosamund Pike recording audiobooks for The Wheel of Time, obviously. I will say I'm a little terrified by the prospect of being read books by Mrs. Coulter. So I wonder what that will feel like. But this is pretty cool behind it. All right. We've got one story left. Just a quick correction before we head into it. Stranger Things season 5 is definitely coming out next year, 2025. The Netflix CEO said in an earnings call, I think this week or last week,
right,
it's coming in 2025. So The Boys, 2026, Stranger Things, 2025.
I apologize, everyone.
Yes. Yes. We are very sorry. But here, take this picture from Dune Prophecy in recompense. So this is a show that's coming out this year. Dune Prophecy coming in November. This is the first image of Emily Watson as Valia Harkonnen. How you feeling about it, Dan?
I feel all right. I'll be honest. Like, when you're watching the trailer, they're like, the great houses won't allow us to do this. I'm like, Game of Thrones in space? I hope it's not, like, too similar to the kind of heavy, intense thing that House of the Dragon has. Also, you know, obviously a lot of money, a lot of production behind it. I'm curious, and I'll check it out. I'm sure I'll check it out. And then we'll see what happens.
Of course.
Dune Prophecy, Dune TV show. Good idea, bad idea. We'll see. Good idea, bad idea. Whenever you go through your life, you have to do something, decide something. Ask yourself that, and maybe that will give you some clarity. That's our advice for today.
Nice.
If you want more advice, we meet every Wednesday at 2 p.m. CST, Central Standard Time, right here on the Winners Command Facebook and YouTube page. Also available in podcast form. Download us and listen to us. Give us a like, give us a comment, give us a subscribe. And if you don't, we'll be sad. Also, we got 2 more episodes of House the Dragon to watch. So join us every Sunday night after those air, those same places, YouTube and Facebook, Winter is Coming, to break them all down in detail. We want to talk about them with you. Where is it all going? Are you nervous? Are you excited? Talk about it with us. Thanks for watching. Thanks for being. And we'll see you anon.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and 2 rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.